James, if you're not aware, is one of the few active fighters in mixed martial arts who is also a coach. He coaches 12 fighters in the UFC, and he's very serious about coaching. He says he's pretty much as serious about coaching or more serious than he is fighting. I think his perspective on the sport is very fascinating because of that, and we had a really good interview. So before we get into it, let me remind you about our sponsor, as I do each and every week, 3Cheese Delta 8 THC. 3Chi is the leader in hemp-derived cannabinoid products. All of these products are formulated by a biochemist grown in the USA, made in the USA, and it's basically a federally legal version of THC. So Delta 8 THC is a cousin strain of Delta 9 THC, which you find in weed. Delta 8 gives you the perfect hybrid of CBD and Delta 9, giving you that similar buzz, but it takes away some of that laziness or the anxiety, paranoia, mental fogginess, whatever you may not like about Delta 9. At least that's what it does for me. I mean, I swear by this stuff. I love it. I use it every single day. The vapes are awesome. The gummies are great at night, especially if you're looking to get some shut eye for a while. The tinctures and oils can be used to make homemade edibles. So if you make those, make sure you send me some pictures, maybe even throw an edible in an envelope and just mail it to the office or something. Throw a brownie in an envelope. It'll be delicious by the time it gets here, I'm sure. But it's great. Actually, don't do that. I'm not trying to get like anthrax sent to me. All right. But anyway, Delta 8, like I said, is a federally legal version of THC, and it's the perfect substitute for anyone using Delta 9 right now who wants the same feelings without the negative side effects or the weird like way you got to go to buy Delta 9 in some states. This stuff will have you feeling amazing, yet functional and clear-headed instead of lazy and paranoid. I do my podcast on 3Chi all the time. During most of my interviews, I'm on 3Chi. So that kind of goes to show you can be functional while you're on it. It's 100% hemp-derived, 100% federally legal, and you can get this stuff at 3Chi.com. That's the number 3Chi.com. And now at select retailers around the country. So if you see this stuff in person, take a picture in the store and send it to me because I think that would be cool. You must be 21 or older to purchase, and if you use the promo code BASEMENT at checkout, you will receive 5% off your order. Again, that's BASEMENT at checkout, the number 3CHI.com. This stuff is amazing. I recommend it tremendously. Okay, let's get into this interview with James Krause. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Welcome back to my mom's basement. I am lucky enough to be joined by one of the men who picked up a win over on Fight Island this weekend. It's Mr. James Krause. James, you picked up a short notice win as well. How are you? How are you feeling?
Well, I'm kind of banged up, but par for the course. You know the deal.
How's the knee? I heard you say in the post-fight interview you thought you might have torn something. Have you had it evaluated yet?
I had an ultrasound done on it yesterday morning. The ultrasound shows a partial tear in my MCL, but I have an MRI on it today to see what, the extent of the tear. So we'll see, but it's definitely torn.
That's unfortunate. I wish you the best of luck in recovery there. But the fight, like I said, was a short notice fight. You got the win. Does your short notice win feel a lot better than a regular win? Because this isn't your first short notice fight. You're kind of known to do this.
I think a win's a win. You know what I mean? It's great. It's there's pluses and minuses to both. I mean, it's great not to have to go through like the grueling training camp or whatever. So that's nice. But I'm not in as good of shape as I normally would be in, but I feel like I'm still, I train all the time, so I still feel like I'm in pretty good shape, and I think I showed that in the fight. It wasn't really a cardio issue. It was more of just a mobility issue than anything towards the end. But, there's pluses and minuses to everything, and, a win's a win there, so I'm happy to get the win for sure.
Does being a coach and having that stuff on your schedule add to you taking short notice fights more often, do you think?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I like to do that. I stay training all the time, so it definitely was really the deciding factor in taking this fight, to be honest with you, because I knew if I didn't take something on the island, then I won't be able to fight for the rest of the year. I have too much on my schedule. Like, I have October 31st, I have November 14th, I have November 28th, I have December 12th, I have January 16th. These are all of my guys that are booked. That's UFC only. And I have another four guys in the UFC that probably aren't that probably will be booked that aren't booked yet. And then I have my own promotion in Kansas City that's on UFC Fight Pass, local, other local stuff, regional stuff that I'm not even counting. So,
Yeah, so I want to get into all of that because that's actually why I wanted to have you on the show. I think your story of being an actively competing coach and one of the few in the sport is very fascinating. And I've become friends with one of your fighters, Megan Anderson, over the years. And she always speaks so highly of you as a coach specifically. So when did you get into coaching and what made you kind of dive into that as a fighter?
I've been coaching. I say this all the time. I've been coaching since way before I should have been. You know what I mean? Like, when I started fighting, if you had 6 months experience over somebody, it was a lot. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, when an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old compete with each other, usually that year difference of maturity is a big player. So that's kind of where I was at in that regard. But I would say that I really I think I went from a teammate helping other people to an actual like a formal, hey, I'm your coach, this is our schedule, this is how we're going to approach this fight, blah, blah, blah. I think I did that about 5 or 6 years ago. Grant Dawson and Megan both came to me around the same time. And that's really when I was like, shit, people are really starting to, you know, move here because of what I'm doing. You know, maybe I need to look at this. I need to start. And honestly, I never really was like, this is super formal. I was just like, hey, this is how we're going to approach this fight. Hey, this is your training schedule. Just helping him through life stuff. I have a lot of experience in the game and in life, you know, so I'm a natural leader, and I naturally want to help people through things. So I think that was a big part of it. And then it just kind of grew, you know what I mean? It kind of grew and everybody getting better. And now, you know, we have 12 fighters in the UFC and it's gotten really cool.
Yeah, you're a go-to name when people talk about coaches now, definitely. So you would say maybe you fell into it and then it snowballed more than like, I really want to be a coach and passionate about coaching before you got into it?
100%. 100%. It kind of happened by accident. And, you know, I kind of obsess over the game. I have a very obsessive and addictive personality. And I think I just see things a little differently than most people. I have a different outlook on how to approach the game. I think I do things a little differently than most coaches do.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, how would you describe your style or approach as a coach? Obviously, you don't have to give away the dirty secrets here. What is your style as a coach?
Well, my team focuses on 5 things that I feel like set us apart from other gyms. That's fight IQ. That's organization of your game. Blending everything together, clinch work and cage work. I think those things, I don't think every other gym is doing all of those things. I think people for the most part suck in the clinch. I don't feel like very many people can wrestle well off the cage. And there's always exceptions to every rule, but I feel like those 5 things combined are what set us apart from other gyms. And I think it shows in our fights. You know, I think our guys are competing at a high level. We're having success right now at a high level. And right now we're riding a high. You know, we're on a big streak right now in UFC. And, I know it's a roller coaster. It always is. It'll come down.
Of course, it's fighting, right? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. You know, if you win a fight, you fight better people. And it's just, you know, at that level, the margin of error is just so thin. But I just feel like I feel like we're a very new school team. I feel like we're approaching things differently. We're approaching things from much smarter than a lot of teams are. We're looking at how we drill. We're looking at strength conditioning. We're looking at how we spar. We don't really spar super hard. It's about putting everything together, the organization of your game, funneling down to give you the best possible chance for you to win. Just a lot of little details like that that I just don't see people focusing on. It just seems like people are kind of throwing random stuff at the table and hoping it sticks. But we are very, very adamant about organizing the game to funnel people down into giving our fighter the best possible chance to win.
As an obsessive guy with an obsessive personality, like you just said, are you a big film watcher when it comes to preparing for fights?
Absolutely. I've already got over an hour today, and I'll probably do another 2 before the day's end. I watch video every day. Yeah, absolutely.
Who are your favorite fighters to watch?
It's not necessarily
fighters that you don't coach.
Yeah, it's not necessarily fighters per se. It's about positions, techniques, how they're filling gaps. What are they doing differently? The one that stands out, Khabib is fighting this weekend. You know, his cage work system, his ground, his catch wrestling style, like all that is obviously very unique. You can learn a lot from that, and I've taken a lot from that. On the flip side of that, Justin, I like his striking style. He's got a very fast twitch, herky jerky style, does a good job like striking off the stance switch, cutting angles, cutting people off into his power. he does a really good job of all that. So both those guys have, you know, incredible details. And that's so I don't really look at people specifically. I look at like one person that's doing something different than everybody else, right? Yeah. Like if we're talking about left body kicks, you know, if we're saying, you know, if I want to look at a left body kick, who's the best left body kicker in all of MMA? The first guy that comes to mind is Edson Barboza. Like that's the guy that comes to mind. So what is he doing differently? Let's watch what his feet look like. Let's watch what his hips look like. You know, what is he doing? Like, that's what I'm looking at. So, and once again, I just feel like we break things down a little differently than others. You know, I like to watch the defensive aspect. I like to watch the footwork. I feel like a lot of MMA guys are just lacking basic fundamentals and very niche positions like clinch. Not very many people are good in the clinch. Not very many people can wrestle well. Still see people trying to double and single on the cage. Like everybody's takedown defense is too good nowadays. You have to start to work for the body lock, a lot of trips now. It's just the game is changing, and I feel like we're changing faster than most people are.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to see Brian Ortega's performance in the main event on Saturday or not? No.
Glimpses of it. I haven't. From what I've seen, it was absolutely incredible. He looked very improved, but I have not had a chance to watch that fight as a whole yet.
I was going to say, from what you're saying about differences and people putting things together differently, I feel like you would enjoy his performance because I'm not an analyst or a coach by any means, obviously, but from hearing what Dan Hardy was saying about his performance on commentary and stuff and how he was putting things together differently and grabbing the leg and teasing takedowns and stuff like that, I feel like you would really like that. Yeah.
I love that stuff, man. Blending. That's the blending category for us. Putting all things together. He's not striking, he's not wrestling, he's doing both at the same time. He's using one to set up the other. That's what our blending category is all about. We're huge on that here.
It was really fun to watch. So I also saw this, and I'm not this is the clickbait show, but I saw you mention Joaquin Buckley, who just got this viral KO, wanted to train at your gym, and you told him no. I'm not really asking about that. Like I said, I'm not looking for the "I hate Joaquin Buckley, I want to fight him" quote. But what is sort of the culture that you're trying to set up in your gym that you didn't want to allow him in to?
Yeah. Like one of the things that he's done that I just don't really have a lot of respect for is when he gets on social media, like I've seen him call out guys like 2 and 3 weight classes below him. He's notorious for that in our area. And, he's just not really like positive dude. He's not a good teammate. He's been kicked out of every gym in St. Louis. So now he's coming to Kansas City. Like if you look at his pictures, he's training with like 4 guys. It's because nobody wants to train with him. And it's just, he's a dickhead training partner. Like, and I've never heard a good word said about him, you know? So it's like, I just don't want that culture in my gym. You know, I want people that want to help others. You know, our team is good and we're having success right now because everybody wants to help each other, you know, with that success. So it's I don't want guys that are selfish. I don't want guys that are out for their own individual success. I mean, that what we're doing leads to that, obviously. I mean, to deny what we're doing right now is ridiculous. You know, we're obviously having that success, but and I'm not dogging on him as a fighter. Like what he did is incredible. That kick was amazing.
Sick.
You know, I don't want that type of attitude in my gym. I don't need it. It's just not something that I want. And it's not something that I can help him with because, you know, that dude wants to go and he wants to spar everybody and he wants to fight everybody in the gym. It's just not what he was asking from my gym. He wanted to come spar and basically fight everybody. It doesn't do my guys any good. It doesn't do him any good. Like, I don't want that. And I told him that. He took offense to it, got lippy with me. So I got lippy back. You know what I mean? I don't want that. There's no progress in that. There's no learning in that. You know, if you want to go spar and beat people up, go somewhere else. That's not what my gym's about. We're trying to get better. We're trying to learn. And, I think the methods in which we're doing that are proven.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious about that. I appreciate you answering that. Now I've got a few final questions that I want you to answer as both a coach and a fighter. They're kind of overall broad scope MMA questions. The first of which being, what do you think about Israel Adesanya's plea to deduct a higher percentage from fighters that miss weight?
Yeah, I don't think that's the answer. Well, he said like, what did he say?
He said 90%.
Yeah. I mean, at that point it wouldn't even make any sense for us to fight because like, let's just say you make $100,000 on a fight. If you're making 100 grand in a fight, you're in at least a 30% tax bracket. So right there, that's 30 off the top. So if you take 90, I mean, you miss weight, you've already lost $20,000. It doesn't even make sense to fight. It hurts you to fight at that point. I'm with you. I see the message he's trying to send though, is there has to be harsher penalties on missing weight. And I don't disagree with that. However, you know, in my opinion, we can do, there's so many different ways to approach it. 90% is too much though. You can do, you know, I think anything over 5 pounds, the fight should be scratched, and the person that made weight should get their show money and their opponent's show money.
Definitely.
You know, and then anything under that, 3 pounds, you can go to 30 or 50% or whatever. You know what I mean? Like even 50 is pushing, because at the end of the day, we got to feed our family, right? These guys are in UFC. Most of the guys are full time fighters. So, yeah, there's a bunch of different ways, but 90 is, that's unrealistic. I get his message and I agree with the message. Just the specifics of it, I don't agree with.
All right. So how do you feel about the current system of mixed martial arts scoring? We hear complaints all the time, right? Fighters will not agree with the decision. Fans will not agree with the decision. Dana will even not agree with the decision. A lot of these people scoring the fights are brought over from the boxing world at times. People that the commission just kind of brings over to MMA. We've heard open scoring suggestions. We've heard Joe Rogan say maybe we need more judging in general, maybe a wider pool of judges for each fight. What do you think about the current system?
The problem with it is each individual state is commissioned by their own state. So it's not just one rule change. You got to get 50 people to agree to this. So that's the first hurdle right there, is getting everybody to be on board with this. But so it starts with, if you want like immediate change, in my opinion, if you want immediate change, it's going to start with like, okay, this is going to be a 5-10 year process to get these rule change, but what can we do right now to make a difference? And right now, open scoring seems to be the, like, if you go in any other sport, basketball, football, baseball, we know what the score is, right? Like in any other sport, we know exactly what the score is in the game or in the fight if we're doing that. So if we want to change right now, like the best possible thing that we can do for change, in my opinion, is open scoring. That's not going to be the answer. That's just a small band-aid to fix the problem. But if we are fixing the problem, I think a bigger pool, I think we bring in 5 judges instead of 3. And I think they have to have, man, when I was on the Ultimate Fighter, like to see some of the judges walking in there is just like, dude, like these guys are like 80 years old. They've never, I mean, you know, they have no idea.
They're talking about the sweet science.
It's not, I mean, they're not, they don't even give a shit about the sport. You know what I mean? Especially in that community, Vegas, California, Florida, like the head guy is taking care of his friends. You know, if you and I are friends and I have this big company, I'm going to give my friend a job. I'm going to give you a job. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care if there's more qualified people. I'm gonna take care of my homie. You know what I mean?
And so then your livelihood is at stake based on their decisions.
Yeah. And the problem is, man, you know, I was saying this after the Giles fight, the problem is like the guy, like my guy scored the first round for Giles. I rode the dudes back for 4.5 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is the problem, is at the end of the day, those guys go home with no consequences, no repercussions. You know, if I mess up at my job, I get my brains beat in because of it. You know what I mean? Like, there's no consequence or repercussion for him. He got the same check. He went home and he probably judged again the next weekend. You know that, and that's a problem. If you mess up with your job, you need to be reprimanded for it, and they're not. There's no accountability for what they're doing. And I think what they have to realize is people's lives are in jeopardy. You know, absolutely, with their decisions, and they don't care. You know, they're not required to do research. There's no requirement for training. There's no requirement for upkeep. There's no requirement to know who's fighting styles. There's no requirement for them. Or in any way, shape, or form, they show up, judge a fight between two people that have no idea about, on a sport they really don't have any clue about, and there's no prep time, there's nothing, and that it just has to change. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there needs to be some kind of course or something stating, you know, at least some guidelines. You know, it can be opinion, like one judge can score grappling more than striking, or vice versa. I don't mind that, but there at least needs to be like some type of guideline along the way. And I do think 5 judges over 3 would avoid some of those razor thin decisions a little bit more, you know? I mean, it's a big problem. It's not going to get fixed anytime soon, but I'm just throwing out suggestions on what I think would help.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, as a coach, I'm a big Conor McGregor fan. I want to know how you break down the Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier matchup in 2021, because I think it's a much different matchup than it was the first time, right? Poirier is much improved. Conor's been away for a long time. So what do you just think about that fight as a coach?
It's a very, very intriguing fight, especially at 170. I feel like that favors Dustin over Conor for
Interesting.
Sure.
Interesting. Why do you feel that?
I feel like at 45, the cut hurt Poirier with his chin. You know what I mean? I definitely yep. feel like the dehydrating your brain. He's been knocked out one time at lightweight, and then, I mean, he's been in wars
yeah.
since that. You know what I mean? Like, wars. I mean, his Gaethje, Hooker, all these
yeah,
guys,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
they're beating his brains in. He's coming forward. You know, Dustin, I'm a big fan of Dustin. I'm a big fan of both these guys. But same. I definitely do think that it's a different matchup. I feel like Poirier has improved more than Conor has, but Conor is a sharpshooter, man. Like, you can say whatever you want. I feel like people have forgot like the level of skill that this guy really brings to the table. And Poirier does as well. Poirier brings some big skill to the table too. But Poirier is a dog, man. Like, that's what, you know, that's the X factor at play here. You know, I feel like the longer the fight goes on, the more it favors Poirier. And then with Conor, obviously you got to watch out for getting sniped out of the rafters in round one. You know, it's a very intriguing matchup, man. I haven't really, like, I need to go back and watch some film to get my, you know, my pick or whatever, but
yeah.
It's a very, very interesting matchup. And I feel like one day I'm like, the next day I switch. It's really intriguing to me. And, you know, if both guys are bringing their A game, it's a matchup that interests me quite a bit.
All right, so I've got one more matchup to ask you about. It's not necessarily just talk to me about the matchup, but it's a how do you prepare for someone who everyone's calling the GOAT, Amanda Nunes. You've got Megan Anderson fighting her in December. And yeah. as that coach, how do you prepare for this figure that everyone's making out to be unbeatable? You know, everyone in MMA is unbeatable till they ain't.
She's not unbeatable. She's been beaten many times already. Now, and I know, listen, she's obviously considered the greatest fighter of all time for a good reason. She's the greatest female fighter of all time for a good reason. She's incredible. Without really diving into, you know, what we're doing, you kind of have to just I go back and I watch all the old stuff, and some of it's relevant, some of it's not. So
yeah, like when you watch that Cyborg fight, can you pull anything from a fight that short, or are you like, no, she left an opening there or there? Like, when she goes in and dominates these fights, is there stuff mm-hmm. as a coach where you could still pull and see things?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're watching a let's say you're watching the Chiefs play whoever, any other football team, like last night, the was it the Bills? Who played last night? It was a shutout.
Bills,
Cardinals. It was the Cardinals in Buffalo. Is that right?
Guy. You're asking the wrong guy.
Whatever. The score was like 32-3, right? So obviously, if you watch the game, it's a shutout, right? But if you watch each individual play, there's mistakes you can find. So once again, it's kind of hard to go into it without.
Yeah,
saying
don't give me the secrets. Trust me. I want Megan to be raising that belt for you.
Of course. But like, you got to go back and you got to watch individual plays, right? And you have to try to win the plays. That's what's important here is I feel like people focus on winning the game or winning the fight or winning the round. Like, we have to go in and we have to win each individual play. And I think that is what if we can focus on winning small plays, on a regular basis, I think we're going to do really well. You know what I mean? But obviously Amanda is incredible at what she does. And she's going to be trying to win plays too. So this, like I said, without diving into it. Yeah. Without diving into it. I mean, that's the gist of it is I feel like everybody focuses on the game. You got to focus on the plays because you can't win every play, right? So you got to figure out what meltdown happened in that play and then try to exploit that.
Absolutely. I appreciate the time, James. This has been a pleasure. Tell the people where they can find you on social media.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm most active on Instagram. The James Krause on everything.
Awesome. And hopefully we'll get you back on the show to break down the game plan and actually tell us what worked in the Megan Anderson fight, eh?
Let's go.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, James.